Realities with Alan Steinfeld. This program is dedicated to exploring evolving human potentials in an evolving world. I look at people and situations that will get us out of our automatic behaviors so we can become more conscious of our mind, body, and spirit. This program is constantly on the lookout for new and different perspectives in achieving a greater and more peaceful reality for the planet. It's about embracing a rational synthesis with a mystical awareness. And tonight's program is very much in that line. I have a really good guest. I have two parts of this program, both talking about, I would say, the mystical understanding of human nature along with sensuality, sexuality, the embrace of love, and how the two come together. Tonight's first guest is Rabbi Ohad Izrahi. Is that right, Ohad?
Izrahi.
And you are very much involved with the Kabbalah as well as the modern understanding of in love and sensuality and sexuality. How are the two resolved? The ancient study of Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism along with the, contemporary model of sexuality. Is that really your
sexuality is not a modern thing. It's not a new thing.
It's not new, right?
To do it since the beginning of creation, right? So the
right
thing is to do it in an open way and a connected way. The sickness of today is that people are doing it in an alienated way with a lot of alienation, and they're cut from their heart, they're cut from spirit, they're cut from each other. That's one. And the other is basically that the whole secret of Kabbalah and the essence of Kabbalah is about what we call unifications, which is how to bring reality deeper into oneness, and a lot of it is working about unifying masculine and feminine energies in the world, in divinity. So what we do is applying it to couples, applying it to human beings, and taking the principles that are coming from Kabbalah and saying, okay, if those principles are working, you know, in the divine world, let's apply it to human beings, and interesting, it works.
Well, it works. So what are the ancient teachings in your understanding of sexuality in terms of Kabbalah? What is it that you're applying, and what has worked through the centuries?
The teachings, as I said, what we do with, and when I say we, it's my wife, Dawn, and myself.
Right.
We established a school that's called Kabbalah, which is bringing the teachings of Kabbalah into love life and the reality of modern people that are in relationships. So what
right
we do is we took, as I said, principles of teachings that are speaking originally about divine energy, and apply it to human beings. For instance, in the core of Kabbalah, there are three stages of development of the relationship between the feminine and the masculine energies, essences in divinity.
Well, could you go through those three stages, those three basic formation structures?
Yeah,
what are
they?
Yes,
of course.
Okay.
So the first stage of relationship is what we call in Kabbalah back to back. We symbolize it as if there are kind of people. I mean, the man and the woman, or the masculine and feminine, are standing back to back, and it's a symbol. It's a metaphor.
Right.
It symbolizes a relationship that I don't see you. We don't see each other, really.
Uh-huh.
And by seeing, we mean like deeply seeing, you know. You can, we can, you know, we can be by each other and, you know, live with each other for a long time, but not really see each other, because what we see is we see the other as means to what we need from them.
Right. That's like what in the David Data work, if you know his work, it would maybe call a first stage relationship.
Yeah, not only that I know, David Data, I know David Data's work very much, and actually we became close friends because we saw that the teachings that I came to from Kabbalah and his teachings are really kind of coming together in a very clear way. It really is what David Data calls first stage.
Right, I can see that. Well, you don't really see, it's very traditional, the relationship. You're not really connected to the other person in an intimate way. That would be what you're describing as the back-to-back.
Well, it might be very, very, people might think that it's very intimate because they need each other. When I'm in a back-to-back relationship, there is a need, a strong need of the other person. Like the man or the masculine needs the feminine, and the feminine needs the masculine, because none of them is perfect. None of them is whole. Not perfect. They were never perfect, but none of them is whole, because the masculine is not aware of his feminine aspect, and the feminine is not aware of her masculine aspect. So,
so the next stage then is what?
And then when we grow from that, and when energy is growing from that, coming what's coming next is a stage that is called in Kabbalah Nefira. It's in Hebrew, and it's called like the sawing of the two. Like in the back to back, they were like attached back to back. It's like Siamese, you know, it's like Siamese twins.
But
then comes the separation between the two. So the second stage of development is when the two are separating from
separate.
Each other.
Yeah. So they would be side by side, or what? Just separate individuals?
Yeah, separate individuals, but they're still in relationships.
Right.
It's the relationships of two people that each one of them finds himself or herself like a whole being and not needing the other.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't need each other. They just decided to be together. So they have, and their togetherness is kind of a business almost, you know. It might be a marriage, it might be a relationship, but they have kind of a business together, which is called a family. So we raise a family together.
I see.
Of course, there's no so much attraction in this stage.
It's like a partnership. You would say more like Hillary and Bill Clinton sort of have that, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. So people call themselves, you know, the partner of each other. And what's specifically important about this stage is that the feminine, in Kabbalah, the feminine is growing in this stage and is developing very rapidly. Basically, when they spoke about it in the, you know, 13th and the 16th century, they kind of, one would say that they saw in advance the feminist movement.
Because traditional Judaism really, I would say, from what I know, and being Jewish, and I don't really know it like you do, I'm not a rabbi, but there was a very much inferior treatment. I mean, they would treat women as inferior in what I would sense to be traditional Judaism. But is that true or not true? Is that a distortion?
It's not a distortion. In all traditional in all the traditional world, it's not a Jewish thing. In the traditional world,
Islamic, Christian, right?
Yeah. Women were treated nicely, but in an inferior,
Second class.
citizens.
Yeah, so in some ways, a second class. There's a lot to say about it, but basically, what the traditional world kind of gives a choice to women. You can either be inferior in some ways, but respected, you know,
right.
be second class, but in society, we'll marry you, we'll love you, we'll respect you, we'll see you in second class, but still, you're here.
Right.
Or you can be the negative one, which is called and symbolized by Lilith in the Jewish mythology. So if you choose to develop your powers, your independence, your sexuality, then you'll be attractive, you know, but we will not have a place for you in our society. And then you kind of, we classify you as belonging to the dark aspect of femininity. And that's very sad. That's very sad.
Can I ask you a separate question? Because I never, I mean, I've only heard hearsay references to Lilith, but there's no formal reference in the Bible or the five books of Moses to Lilith. Where does that mythology come from, the Lilith?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if you know, but I wrote a whole book about Lilith. It's called Who's Afraid of Lilith?
No, I would love to get that, because where does the original story come from if it's not...
The original story of Lilith comes from Midrash. Midrash is a Jewish mythology or wisdom stories. Yeah, that is coming from Babylon in the 9th century.
Oh, really? That's its origin.
And that's the first full story of Lilith. But there are sources before that, but we don't have the full story of the origin of Lilith. So from the 2nd century, we already have the origins of the story, but not the full one.
I see. That's where it comes from. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, get back to the third stage.
Okay, so, in the second stage, despite the fact that we're in a traditional world that women were seen as inferior...
Yes, see as what? Hello? Hello? Oh, hi.
Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Feminine, when the woman is getting independence and being an independent being, taking into herself masculine qualities and basically saying, anything you can do, I can do better. You know?
That's that women coming up through. And so there was actually a place for women in the ancient Kabbalistic tradition then.
Of course, yes. There is, and there is a very surprising material that was written in the in those centuries, in the 13th and the 16th century, about the development and the independence and the growing up of women.
Did they sort of predict the times that we're in now, would you say?
I think so. They did predict it, and also in the there were people that already wrote and called for the independence of women. Like there was a very special Kabbalist in the 17th century that came and said, "Women, you need to be independent. You need to be not dependent on your husbands." And
but how does that fit into the traditional Jewish, you know, religion, because it seems so separate from what, you know...
Well, you know, what we see today as traditional Jewish religion is kind of a shrinked version of the traditional Jewish religion after the Holocaust and all that.
Right.
The world of Jewish religion was much more developed and open and interesting and a lot of variety out there.
Would you say that the idea of many partners comes from the ancient Jewish tradition as well, you know, different, you know, non-monogamy? Is that part of the original culture, like Abraham had wives, and it came out of a Middle Eastern culture, so?
Monogamy was a new thing in the ancient world, but it was only for men. Non-monogamy for women, believe it or not, there are some clues about it that it will be opened in the days of Messiah. You know, in the end of days, which some people will say today, it's today. You know, some people would say we need to bring Messiah by working on that. So there are clues even in the Talmud that speaks about the ability for even women to have more than one partner. But the question is, you know, do we know how to make one partner really, really happy?
Well,
can we do
that's
more?
The problem. How can you make more than one partner happy if we can't
yeah,
make one partner?
Exactly.
So we covered those three stages, basically, then, right?
We covered two.
The third stage, yes.
Yeah, the third stage of development is called face-to-face.
Right.
And it's coming back together with a lot of passion of the feminine and masculine. In the third stage of development, in the face-to-face stage, they are equal, but they say we're equal, but we want to give different gifts to each other.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not coming together with my partner because I need her in the third stage. I don't need her. I'm separate. You know, I'm a whole being.
Uh-huh.
But I'm coming back together because there is something unique that I want to give her because I'm masculine. And there is something unique that she want to give me because she is feminine. Well, and this is a different...
But let me just interrupt you there for a second. I understand it's a different perspective than traditional relationship, but in the Kabbalah Center, the Rev Berg tradition, he says women are coming together with men to help their correction, tikkun, to help them complete their things. And women are already complete unto themselves.
Should I say that I don't see what the Kabbalah Center teaches as real Kabbalah?
Okay. I just wanted to get your opinion. That's okay.
Yeah.
No, you have. Yeah, I think that's great to express there. I was a little suspicious of them myself, but
yeah.
No, but I mean, they have a lot of people following. But
there's a kind of traditional thought there that is not really, really, you know, evoked and open.
It seems very limited in a way and very watered down, I mean, what I get from the people at the Kabbalah Center. I mean, they have something, and they're offering some people some kind of spirituality, but I think it seems like what you're doing is going deeper.
Well, I don't like to talk about other people.
Of course. Okay, let's
see. I just want to say that there are many branches in Kabbalah, and there were many branches in Kabbalah from the early days of Kabbalah. So one can choose, you know, how deep and how radical you want to go.
Right. Okay, so as the men and women stand face-to-face and they offer each other gifts, then where do we go from there? I mean, that is the highest stage of relationship.
That's really the highest stage of relationship, because in this stage, you're not focusing about yourself, but you're focusing about gifting the other with your gifts from a non-needy place. And because you're not anymore protecting your separate being so much, so you allow yourself to rest into your true nature.
Mm.
And also because of that, because you rest into your true nature, whether you're more masculine, whether you're more feminine, there is, again, a whole lot of passion.
Uh-huh.
So in this higher stage, which is basically where Kabbalah is aiming to, in the connection of female and male, masculine and feminine, there is divinity, there is sacredness that comes together with passion.
Uh-huh.
And this is something, you know, that people don't really understand. And I think that's when I decided to work on relationships in Kabbalah, It came because of that, because I saw that many people, when they think about passion, they kind of leave God behind.
Right. So how do you bring God back into that? Because you've just described a really the basic highest stage of relationship. So where does the God come back into that in terms of Kabbalah and Judaism?
Well, God consciousness comes to this relationship area when we are developed enough to see us and the other person as the face of God.
Mm-hmm. So
and to see the passion between us two as God passionate to oneself, to God's self. So you see the sexual occasion and the sexual attraction itself as something that is not far from sacredness, but you start to feel that sexual passion is basically sacred passion. It's hard to say. It's really connected to a kind of deep core of understanding.
Is that an ancient Kabbalistic understanding, or is that something
Yes, it is. It is.
Okay.
It's in Kabbalah, there are what I call radical Kabbalists.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the beloved teachers of radical Kabbalah, he wrote this quote. He said, like that, he said, when I was young, I thought that to be a sacred person, you need to leave behind any sexual pleasure,
uh-huh.
like to avoid sexual pleasure. And I was kind of practicing that. And he said, and after years of practice, God just had grace on me and showed me the deep secret. And the deep secret is that pleasure is sacred.
Mm. Who was that writer?
Is sacred. Hmm?
Who's the writer of that, you said? That's radical Kabbalah?
Well, his name was Baruch of Kosov. He's not such a known author unless you're in the Hasidic world. In the Hasidic world, he's very known.
What's his name?
Baruch?
Baruch?
Baruch was his first name, and he's from Kosov, from the city of Kosov.
Kosov.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Hasidics really sort of seem like they're very uptight about sex, don't you?
Today. But, you know, that's what happened. It's so sad, because the Hasidic movement started with teachers that were so radical, and they were dealing with sexuality and attraction, and the whole teaching of Hasidism, mystical Hasidism, in the core of it, is how to go into the body and into sensation and work with that as sacred event. Like when you
really?
Feel pleasure or pain, whatever you feel in your body and sensation, how to see God through that, not to avoid it, not to deny it, but to go deeper into it and feel it as a sacred feeling.
Who originated the Hasidic movement?
The Baal Shem Tov.
Oh, the Baal Shem Tov.
Yes,
so,
the 18th century.
It's in what century is that?
The 18th century.
Okay. Because the way you're describing God, it's a different concept than some father figure in the sky. It's a whole other...
Oh, of course.
Well, this is what most Western Jews, Christians, Muslims even have this idea of this figure in the sky.
We need to grow up from also understanding religion in a shallow way. Religion has a shallow aspect.
Of course. So how do you define God, then?
God is you can't define God.
But,
God is not something to be defined.
But would you say God is everything, every minute, every moment, everything? I mean, not an individualized entity.
God is not an object.
But then who is Yehovah? Yud-Heh-Vuv-Heh. Who's that represent?
That's those letters, the Yud and Hey and Vav Hey, are the letters of breath.
Uh-huh.
It's if you give the sound of it, it's, and in the Bible it's written actually with no vowels, so it's just the sound of the breath. It's the breath of life. It's the power that is breathing existence into being all the time. You can say that God is everything that exists and everything that does not exist all together.
It's a radical understanding of Judaism and religion, because most people today do not have that understanding that you're giving us right here, you know.
Oh, of course, and it's kind of pity and it's sad, but we need to know that within the mysticism of religion, there is a lot of depth, and we're not supposed to, think about it only in a shallow way. There are, of course, as I said, there are shallow aspects,
of course.
Religion is kind of opium to the masses,
Right.
But beyond the shallow level, there were, really deep and really radical rabbis and scholars and mystics. And we need to look for what they said, because they were, quite wise and developed and evolved people.
Do you want to hold on while I get another guest on the line who's teaching about Tantra?
Please, yeah, here I am. I'm here.
Okay, Scott, can you get the second guest on?
It's alright as the rain. The joy, the sadness, and the pain. It's the sacred gift of life. So who am I to complain? Hey, 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 hey. I heard the blind man say, you think your life is so hard, why don't you try being blind for a day? Hey, 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 hey. What you gonna choose before you judge that man? Walk a mile or two in his shoes. It's never really what it seems.
Hi, this is Alan Steinfeld. I'm back here with Rabbi Ohad and a new guest, Lori Handlers. Lori, are you there? Lori? Hello, Lori? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hello? Do you hear me?
I'm Ohad and I'm here, yes.
You hear me, Ohad. Does anyone else hear me?
I can't hear anyone else. Ohad.
Yeah.
Seth. Seth, I can't hear you. Seth. I am back here with Ohad. We're talking about a new understanding of Judaism, especially as it connects to sensuality and male-female relationships. So, Ohad, where do we go from here now that we have this new understanding of relationships, the male and female equal? What's the next evolution of that?
Well, beyond being equal, we need to know.
Well, what do you teach in your workshops? What is that? How is it that you proceed from that point?
Yeah, from that point, we need to know how to give our unique gifts. I mean, there is equalness, but then there is the variety and the beauty of the variety between the what it is that I was, I came to this world as a man. And what it is that my partner came as a woman, and what can we gift each other from that place that will make love just beautiful and blossoming?
Well, how do you draw that out of your partner? How do you pull those gifts out of each other or out of yourself?
No. We're not throwing out of each other. We're making the other blossom. So I'm constantly asking myself, what can I take out of myself to be so I will be able to make my partner radiant and blossoming more and more.
What do you mean? It's like unconditional love. Are you saying is what something?
Well, unconditional love is very good, but the question is, how do you practice it?
Well, how do you practice it then?
So there are practices, and they're not for the phone or for the radio. But what we do in our workshops is we give practices to people, and we go deeper into studying and into practicing.
Give me an example. We don't have to go through the practice, but just tell me an example of what kind of, would it be like eye gazing? Would it be like breathing together?
This is part of it. This is definitely part of it, but a lot of it will be of realizing the other as a divine being and seeing deeper and deeper into the other, and also practicing showing the gifts of, which we didn't speak about at all. What is the gift of the feminine? What is the gift of the masculine?
Can you go into that a little bit?
We can.
Okay. And then we'll also, maybe Lori will come on, who's a teacher of Tantra, who's looking at the same thing from a more East Indian perspective. But go ahead, go into like the gifts.
Let's symbolize it as the sun and the moon, which is one of the symbols that Kabbalah is working with.
Uh-huh.
So we see the sun as, excuse me, as a masculine symbol and the moon as a feminine symbol.
Right.
So what's happening with the sun? It's set in place. It doesn't go anywhere. It's just there, shining, present, ever present, ever shining, and it's giving a center.
So you would say that's sort of the gift of the sun, in a sense.
That's the gift of the sun, exactly, to be there, to be present. So the present of the masculine is deep presence.
Stillness,
and
presence, constant. This is it goes back to the David Data stuff. I mean, this
it's
is what
very.
Said.
I said it in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's very what I love about David Data's work, which is I think the best work, is that it's so close to Kabbalistic understanding. It's amazing how close it is.
So then the gift of the moon then is what then?
Well, look at the moon. The moon is constantly changing.
Uh-huh.
Constantly in motion and changing. The moon is, you know, circling the Earth and circling the Sun, and growing and going down, and you know, full moon, empty moon, new moon. So the gift of the feminine is the change and the energy that is changing in motion all the time, and shining the feminine light, which is never the same. That's the beauty of the feminine. It's never the same. It's constantly changing.
So the man, the male energy, has to understand that about the female energy. And the
when we don't understand that, we clash. There are so many misunderstandings in relationships.
Well, because most men want women to be constant. I mean, at least the ones I know in my own. You know, it's the. You know, it's we have to adjust to the fact that women are always changing, you know. I mean,
well, most men want contradict themselves, because on one hand they want a feminine woman. They yearn for the feminine gift and they really want feminine energy.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they block feminine energy by basically trying to control women and to tell them like to behave. What's called
now, why would they do that? Why do men do that to women?
Because we don't. Because from a male perspective, from a man perspective, the feminine being is chaotic. And therefore
wild.
threatening. Misunderstood.
Right.
Like it feels crazy. The emotions, the drama, the whole thing, it just feels chaotic and crazy. And from a male perspective, it's like, what's happening with you? Like, you know, come back to center, you know, behave, or, you know, be a mensch.
So
be a human being. But
right. So how does a male then start to appreciate that special gift of the woman, which is constantly changing, you know? David says a woman is like the ocean, constantly different and moving.
Yeah, well, first of all,
how do we learn to appreciate that?
First of all, you need to decide whether you really want to receive this gift of of the feminine, and then you need to learn how to appreciate it and not to be afraid of it. One of the things is that men are actually also afraid of the power of the feminine.
Yeah.
Once you learn to be free in your masculine being, which means you are free in your presence, you're here, you are able not to fidget, not to shut off, not to be flaky. You're just here. You're just present with a lot of inner freedom, which means.
I think the more the male energy gets in touch with itself, it appreciates that dynamic energy of the feminine, because it allows the male to be more itself. You can only be strong in your masculine as you embrace the strong feminine. And the two start to build a power together as well.
Yeah,
that dynamic stillness is the embrace of the masculine and feminine coming together.
The question is, where do you start? And as a man, you start from embracing your own masculinity and the power of the masculine.
That's still presence. I mean, if we go back to what the sun is, that's still shining presence, embracing
it's still
that.
Shine, yes, and presence, loving presence. And freedom, deep freedom, which freedom, not freedom from the feminine. You know, many men think that, you know, to be free is not to be held by a woman, you know, not to be free from her. It's not to be free from her. It's to be free to love her.
To love her. But so many women are coming also from desperation that, you know, it becomes, you know, women want to hold on because they feel that that gives them power. They need to find the power in themselves first as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's when you come from a needy place, you're in the back-to-back stage that we spoke before.
Right.
If you're coming from a needy place, of course, a woman will want to, you know, hold a man and kind of in an obsessive way, and a man will always search for another woman and another woman, another woman.
Right, right. So to come face to face, the man and the woman from a both empowered place is to appreciate your own gift and the gift of the other.
And to learn how to shine your own gift. And it's not easy because our modern world doesn't know how to shine masculine gift, nor how to shine feminine.
Well, how do you describe it, shining the masculine gift? What does that look like?
Laurie's on the line.
Okay. Well, Laurie will be right with you. Just answer that question, and then we'll talk to Laurie about the feminine. Okay, tell me the masculine.
Yeah, to shine masculine gift is to be so free that you can love in reality. You're not escaping reality. You're not escaping women and reality, but you are free to be in the world, free to love, free to give your gift without checking out. You're not checking out. You're present, and you are reliable and trustworthy.
Laurie, are you there?
I'm here.
Laurie Hansen, everybody, teacher of Tantra, author of Sex and Happiness, new, very exciting book on relationships, couples, sexuality. Thanks, Laurie. So we've been talking about the gifts of the male and the female and how we can come together. Do you want to give us a feminine tantric perspective on the gift of the feminine?
I would. I just heard the last moment of what your other guest, what's your name?
Oh, okay, but he's still on, so we're...
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge what he said and say, like, I rarely have ever heard a man speaking like that about being free to give your gift and love and not check out. So I got really excited hearing that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right, so the feminine perspective on the feminine gift?
Yeah. A woman, give us that. What is it that the women you feel give in a tantric relationship, in a fully enlightened romantic sexual relationship?
I feel women can give. Women give. If it's a pure give of the feminine, it's to give from their heart total love and embracing all that is. And it's also receiving what comes back. And all of this play that I'm talking about has, like, no strings. It has nothing to do with how many dinners he buys me or what kind of a ring I'm going to get on my finger or any of that stuff. It's not that. It's really simply being in the dance and giving love from the heart, love from the yoni, sexuality, with the gift, meaning the true gift, nothing expected in return.
We're talking about the David Data third stage relationship.
Okay.
Because Ohad's perspective is very much connected or in alignment with David Data's work.
In the David Data paradigm, I didn't know that. In the David Data paradigm, I guess it would be total devotion.
Well, not devotion. I think it's more recognizing the divinity in each other and being free to allow your partner to give and receive. That's what I would say.
Okay. But I think I just said that, but I didn't couch it in exactly those terms.
How does Tantra fit into that, then?
You know what I'm asking?
I actually think it's the other way around.
In which
way? I think it's how does that fit into Tantra.
Okay. How does that fit into Tantra then? And actually also define Tantra, because so many people define it so many different ways.
Okay, well, I'll start with that, and then I'll speak about how one thing fits into the other or how they connect, really. Tantra is the feminine aspect, the mother of yogas. And the best way for me to I can say how it's defined, which is expansion through awareness is one particular definition. I like to think of it as transformation through pleasure, through being able to receive, both genders to be able to receive. And how I like to compare it to yoga in general, the kind of yoga that people practice, where there's a yoga studio on every corner of the United States today, or sometimes there's two yoga studios on the block.
Right.
The yoga that most people are practicing is the masculine form, which all comes from Hatha yoga, and was preserved when India was invaded. And so it was able to flourish, and it's come to the United States. And what Hatha yoga is about is strength, stamina, flexibility, and control, which are masculine aspects. And wonderful to have. Wonderful, especially if you're a lover.
That's what I would say.
To have strength, stamina, flexibility, and control.
In the Kabbalistic term, that's what they call. Is that true? That's right. Yes. Okay, so.
Yeah. And then Tantra would be the feminine aspect, which educates you in chaos and the unknown, navigating chaos and navigating the unknown, which is out of control.
That's what he was also saying about the feminine nature is sort of out of control in from a male perspective, but it's the dance, it's the movement, it's the, you would call it the unknown? Is that
yes, I do. I call it Latihan.
Is that an Indonesian word for just the experiencing of the moment, right?
Yes. And being only guided by inner guidance, moment to moment, by impulse.
Right. I like the first chapter of your book called Making Love in the Unknown.
Yeah. Well, that's the dessert. It's actually the 10th law of intimacy.
Right.
And I give it to people first because I like to give people dessert before they eat the meal. They can have dessert first, and
dessert.
Then they can get there slowly.
Does that make sense in your paradigm?
Next. But, yeah,
absolutely,
make love
absolutely.
The
that's the feminine gift is giving the energy, the unknown, the mystery, the ever-changing, the ever-in-motion and change and radiating and... I loved what Laurie said, transformation through pleasure. This is absolutely amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
So maybe we can like transcend all the religions and all the names and just get back to basic human understanding without having to label it Kabbalah or Tantra or...
What's wrong with giving names?
Well, because it seems like it divides it. I mean, if for so long we're talking about the same thing, why give it a label and why not just make it what it is to really be fully human?
Would you want all cultures to be one culture with no differences? You wouldn't go Indonesia and have different architecture. It's just different languages.
But the differences can also get in the way. What were you saying, Laurie?
No, I don't. I actually, I feel okay about what you're saying. I think, I know for myself that when I found Tantra, I felt my first tantric experience in a workshop, I felt like I could connect to myself as a primordial being.
Mm-hmm.
I went right back to being a cell, a drop of water in the ocean, cell.
What initiated that experience?
That was the name of it, Tantra. But since I've been teaching Tantra,
So what did that brought on that experience?
Tantra is so hyped in the press, and it's so misunderstood that I feel like it's always an uphill struggle to get people to understand that it isn't kinky sex.
Tantra is not kinky sex. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. What? Okay.
So I'm saying that because you're asking, should we have names of things? Aren't they dividing? Yes, the name of Tantra divides people because it swerves them off sometimes into a strange definition which has nothing whatsoever to do with what it is.
Right.
So I can agree with that, and yet I like cultural differences, and I like, you know, different experiences and stuff.
Yeah,
I agree with some of that too.
It's just that cultures can also divide when they think they you know, I'm not saying we're either one of you are doing that, but it's like it seems like we need to go beyond that and not have one world culture, but just acknowledge the common humanity throughout.
Of course.
Yeah.
Religions should be the, you know, not a problem, but just beautiful, the beautiful variety of, you know, the different faces of the one God. Alan, I need to continue with my evening.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'll keep talking to Laurie, but just give us your website and your email and how to get in touch with you and how long you're going to be here.
Yeah, I'm from Israel.
Yeah.
We didn't say that. And,
I know.
And my website, our website, my wife and mine, is Kabbalove, which is Kabbalove, .net. And there is a Hebrew and an English website. And now we're in New York, and we're going to be teaching this coming Tuesday in Centerpoint Yoga Studios at 8 o'clock in the evening. The details are in the website, on the website. Okay. We're going to off to L.A. to teach and...
Well, thank you so much for being a guest. Hopefully, maybe some upcoming shows will have you back, and we'll go into greater detail, okay?
Thank you very much, Alan, and thank you, Laurie. And
great talking to you. Say hello to Dawn as well, your wife.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Laurie?
Yeah.
Laurie?
Yes.
Laurie?
I'm here.
Oh, hi. We just have a few minutes. Do you want to just give an overview a little bit of where you're coming from and talk a little bit about the new book and some upcoming workshops?
Yeah, I would love to. Let me just say this. I'll just say to people that I've been practicing Tantra now since 11, 12 years. And when I mean practicing, I do practices. I do breathing practices. I do various body practices, and I also practice moving in the unknown, Ladi Han. And since that time,
does it also have to do with sexuality?
Pardon?
Is sexuality also involved or not?
Well, you know, I'm going to say something to you, Alan. It's been both for me. When I first was studying Tantra, I was not in any kind of a relationship, and I was not open to being sexual with anybody at the time. I really just needed to find my own center.
Uh-huh.
And then for 5.5 years while I was in practicing Tantra and beginning to teach, I was in a relationship, and so there was a sexuality aspect of it.
Is the core of Tantra sexual or not sexual? Or maybe there's red Tantra and white Tantra, as they're calling it.
Yeah. There's white Tantra, which is more a self-practice.
Uh-huh.
And there's red Tantra, which is more a sexual practice. But red Tantra can be with a partner or with yourself.
But isn't Tantra getting to the base, the core energy that is the life force, that's the creative energy, the feminine, basically?
And you don't need to have sex with anyone to get in touch with that. That's just right there. It's a birthright. It's a given. It's right in each person's body.
Right.
I just did a book signing on Saturday over here. I'm on Fire Island. And I did a book signing, and there was all women at it. And they were a little bit goosey, you know. Like, I said, do you want to have a tantric experience? And they were like, oh, my God, our husbands aren't here. I said, so what? You know, we're not going to have sex. We're going to, we're just going to juice up our bodies. And they
right.
had the
Maybe
best
Maybe you
time.
Can do another show with me at some point, and we can go through some of those exercises on the phone, those
yeah,
breathing on the radio, those
that
breathing, opening breathing.
But, you know, getting back to what you're saying, you know, I don't care about all that red, white, all those things. I basically care that people are empowered to know who they truly are. Like, they know their vital life force, they know their energy, they come to know it and trust it. They come to know and trust their inner guidance, and they absolutely open themselves up to receive that which the universe offers. And Tantra is a way to do that. And sometimes it comes in the form of a partner, and it's fabulous, wonderful, mind-blowing sex. And sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's money flowing in. Sometimes it's just going, oh, my God, can it get any better than this? Like, everything is coming. You know, and it really is
so
about surrendering.
You have to make yourself
to
available to that energy to get it to flow.
And knowing that it's that all of it, all of life is a gift.
So really, every way you're living is the gift of Tantra. I mean, at the tapping into the flow, as my friend Paul Lowis says, is tapping into that tantric force, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And taking down the walls of resistance, like just noticing, oh my God, I'm resisting. Okay, let go. Letting go of resistance, letting go of opposition. Even, you know, I teach boundaries in my classes, Alan, and even getting to a point where boundaries aren't necessary. But that, you know, that comes after knowing what boundaries are.
You have to know what boundaries are in order to transcend them. But most people don't even have clear boundaries, so
exactly.
You teach them clear boundaries before they...
Once I am able to say no, then then people can trust that when I say yes, I mean yes, and then eventually I can just say yes.
Well, I think that's something maybe some women and the male-female, women-man relationship is very unclear in those basic understandings. When a woman says no, when she says yes, or when a man says yes, you know, it that gets very confusing, doesn't it?
It does. It really
so
does. But I think
how do you clarify that?
What?
How do you get that? How do you get men and women clear on their boundaries? How do you? I mean, we're almost out of time. Actually, we are sort of out of time. But just
okay.
If you could just,
I can't. Yeah, and I can't answer that in one sentence, except to just say to you that I have in my courses. I have 3 levels of courses, and in my second course, which you have to take my first course to take, I have a bliss course, ecstasy course, and initiation course. In my ecstasy course, we get boundaries. And like a playful thing. Like everyone gets boundaries like playing, and they actually get them. And they're in. And then once they're in, that shifts everything. Then they know who they are. Like really as a safe being, and they can really play and have some fun about it instead of being in survival about it.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Can you just give your website and how people can contact you and the name of your new book?
Yeah, I have a lot of websites. I'll give my main one.
Yeah.
ButterflyWorkshops.com. And from ButterflyWorkshops.com, you can find all my others. My book has a website, SexAndHappiness.com, and so on and so forth. I have a lot of things going on. But
We'll do a whole show maybe next week or in the following weeks, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I'll see you.